You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. Attention all theater lovers! This Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Hello and welcome to the Break a Bat podcast, where baseball meets Broadway. An attempt to show that my two favorite mediums don't have to live in such separate worlds and maybe even break some stigmas. We're happy to have you with us. Now let's play ball. Hello and welcome to Break a Bat, where baseball meets Broadway and sports meets show business. This is Al Malafronte coming at you tonight for the Broadway Podcast Network. Always a treat when we get to welcome folks to the batter's box who are native New Yorkers and have also taken show business by storm in a short period of time. Over the last 5 years, my guest tonight has burst onto the soap opera scene in all-star caliber fashion through her performance as Ciara Brady in Days of Our Lives, which earned her an Emmy Award this summer, actually. And right now on Peacock, you can catch her starring in the show's limited series, Beyond Salem. We're so grateful she could join us tonight. So with that being said, I ask you all to please turn your attention to home plate. Just beyond the marquee, now batting, Victoria Konofal. Victoria, welcome.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
It's such an honor. Like I said, we love when we get to bring in folks who are native New Yorkers. And I feel like this is like a special occasion for us. You know, maybe it's once or twice a year that we have hitters from the soap world join us. So you're helping our batting average with the audience today.
Oh, my goodness. Well, it's my pleasure.
Well, it's good to have you here. And I was also very happy to hear you're a Yankee fan.
I am.
Because I know you could have gone either way growing up in Brooklyn. So.
Right. Yeah. My my first game was actually a Mets versus Yankees game at Yankee Stadium. And I was rooting for the Yankees. My best friend was rooting for the Mets. The Yankees won. Of course we did. And it was a victorious day for me.
Now, were you a Jeter or an A-Rod girl?
Honestly, Jeter.
Honestly, that's a good answer. There's usually no right or wrong answer to what I talk about in the show, but that's like how you have to answer if you're a true Yankee fan. It's Derek Jeter over.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, Jeter's a classic.
Yeah, the best. Now a Hall of Famer, too.
Yeah, very proud of him.
Yeah.
He did our city well.
He certainly did. And so have you, by the way. You had quite the summer.
I have, yeah. It's been crazy.
Red carpets, Emmy Awards, like a new series. I know 2021's had its challenges, but like on a personal note, you're crushing it. Congratulations.
I mean, yeah, thank you. I'm really grateful and blessed for all the opportunities that have come my way. You know, I've just been trying to weather the storm like everyone else. And it's been an incredibly blessed summer, to say the least. You know, the Emmy being like the thing that takes the cake. I still can't believe it. It really hasn't hit me. And I honestly don't think it ever will. Because in theory, it seems like this, you know, massive achievement. It's like, oh my God, you've reached like the tippity top. But it's like, I don't feel that yet. Because I feel like I still have so far to go in my own personal career journey. And so I do like to like reflect and be grateful for it, but it doesn't feel real. It doesn't feel like a tangible thing. It's crazy.
Now, do you keep it in the living room or anything, or within plain sight?
Yeah. It is. It's in my living room. It's right on top of the mantle at my doorway. So it's the first thing I see when I come in and the last thing I see when I leave. It's nice to look at, but I don't like, again, it's hard for me to even understand what it is I'm looking at. Like I haven't, you know, it just got in the mail 3 weeks ago. So I won in July, or June. I don't even remember. I won this summer and it just got to my house 3 weeks ago.
Wait, you don't get to take it home from the ceremony?
No, it's a fake one. They send it to you a couple months later.
Wow. You know, that's interesting because in baseball, for example, they have the baseball writers dinner where they give out all of the awards. And yeah, like they have, you know, these guys like kind of have their caddies take out the actual hardware with them, at least if they live in New York. Otherwise, they have the team ship it to them. And the Mets had an interesting situation with that because they shipped Jacob DeGrom's Cy Young Award and didn't use enough packaging or something, and the whole thing like broke apart in the mail. So I hope that Days of Our Lives did like a good job with like the bubble wrap and everything and make sure it got back to you in one piece.
Yeah, well, the Academy sent it to me themselves. The Emmy like board, I guess, the board of members, they sent it, and they sent it in this beautiful leather box with like padding and stuff in it. It was lined with satin. I'm like, oh my God. This is bougie and I love it.
Now, how surreal was that whole, the Emmy Day, for example? I know you've been nominated before, but you're a bit more seasoned in the game now. Is there a story or two that stands out about everything leading up to it? And then I guess that feeling once your name is actually called?
Yeah. So this Emmy was special in general because it was a COVID Emmy, the second one. So the ceremony was filmed 2 weeks before it actually aired. And they had all of the nominees record their acceptance speeches, regardless of whether or not we knew we won. So like the footage from the actual ceremony, that wasn't happening in real time. That was shot prior. They also had me film like my gracious loser face where they're like, yeah, crazy.
I thought they was something that they made up on Friends. You remember that with Joey Tribbiani when he was going for the Sophies?
Oh, yes. Yep, I remember very vividly. He was also on Days of Our Lives.
Dr. Drake Ramore.
Oh, I'm so happy you mentioned that. Yeah, man, I love that show. But no, it's a real thing. I mean, it's not a real thing when the ceremony is in real time without the COVID restrictions. But because of the COVID restrictions, they had to put something together. Like they actually green screened an audience in. You know, for like the wide shots, it was all fake. It was all made up. And they had me sitting on the carpet and they were like, okay. And they're calling out the nominees and they didn't call your name. Give us your reaction. Go. And I was like, I can't take this seriously. So I like looked sad for a second and then I started clapping and then I started laughing and they're like, yeah, girl, we can't use that take. Give us something better. And I was like, okay. And so we filmed it again and I couldn't take it seriously. So they're like, all right, we'll just show your picture. We're not gonna, you know, whatever. But they ended up not even using that. They ended up using my acceptance speech because I won. So I didn't even have to worry about that.
Oh my God. So you give an acceptance speech like under the, let me ask you, so you prepare that weeks in advance? I've actually never spoken to anyone about that. Like, how does that typically work? Even in a non-COVID time, you don't go off the cuff?
Yes, you can. I mean, you take it as personally as you want. Some people prepare, some people write, you know, a very meticulous thing. I was not prepared. I'm very much like a last minute thrive under pressure kind of person. So I had written down in my iPhone notes, like a couple things that I wanted to say. And once we arrived to the Emmys, we did the carpet, we did, you know, the interviews and whatnot. And I thought I was going to have more time before they filmed my acceptance speech, but they were like, all right, and it's your turn, Victoria. And I'm like, you guys, give me at least 2 minutes. I have no idea what I'm going to say. Like, it's not going to serve either of us if I go up right now. So let me just look through my notes, organize my thoughts. Because also it feels so ingenuine when you're up there and you have no idea if you won. You're just, you know, it's like you're acting as yourself. And I act for a living. I don't want to act as Victoria Conifol. You know, I want to be genuine. And so I tried to like put myself in a position of, okay, you won. Gratitude, ground yourself in the gratitude of it. Like, because that's the only way that I could propel this speech forward to make it sound somewhat genuine. You know, I had no idea that I won. So, I had some things written down, but for the most part, it came off the top of my dome. I remember at the end of it, I don't even know why I said this. I'm not Spanish. I'm not of Latino heritage, right? I'm Polish.
Yeah,
I'm
you're Miss Poland USA. Yeah.
Yeah, like I'm Polish, and at the end of my speech, I say "amor, dinero y la pura vida," which means love, money, and a pure life. I don't know why I said that. It just came off my brain. I'm like, I'm not even Latin. Like, what am I doing speaking Spanish, accepting my Emmy speech? Like, this is crazy. I was nervous, I guess, like, to calm my nerves. I started speaking Spanish. Who knows? But yeah, I ended up doing that. And that was hilarious. Rewatching that, I'm like, oh, God, what was I thinking? The answer is nothing. I wasn't thinking at all. I was just winging it.
How did mom and dad react to that?
Oh man, they thought it was hilarious.
Yeah, all right.
I mean, they love the rest of the speech too. So they were just, I mean, they honestly didn't even care what I said. They were just happy that I won. They were so proud of me. So
now that you're an Emmy winner, I do have to know, you know, with the whole mini series that you've been doing, do you get to offer notes on Sierra and maybe provide on, you know, maybe some of the insight as far as where you want to take her?
No, I would love to, but no, it doesn't really change much in terms of the way the production treats me. You know, they're happy about it, but they're kind of like, all right, and moving forward, you know, business as usual. I would like to potentially have more influence. And I guess I've been playing the character for so long that I do kind of take her in my own direction and they trust me with it because I've been doing well so far. So they let me, you know, ad lib here and there if I need to. But ultimately, it's their word above everyone else's.
Interesting. Well, you know what? That's good that you just kind of, you know, don't piss anyone off. To go back to Joey on Days of Our Lives. Yeah, I'm not sure if you remember, you know, telling people that, I think he told the writer that he doesn't watch soap operas and he had to do a little something to get out of it.
No, that happened in the second interview. I know the show off the back of my hand. Test me with that.
Oh, yeah, the first one, they wrote him off. Yeah, that's right.
They wrote him off after the first interview because he said that he writes a lot of his own lines. And the writers were like, you write your own lines? Yeah, write this. And then it cuts to him going, I fall down an elevator, Chef.
It's the most New York show, though, isn't it? Like, don't you appreciate it even more, like, being a New Yorker and working in that industry and, like, all the Joey Tribbiani stuff?
Yeah. And, like, so I grew up watching that show. I went to LaGuardia, which is where Jennifer Aniston graduated. She graduated from my high school. So that ties me into the show. On the show, I work with John Aniston. He plays my grandfather and that's her dad. So I'm tied into that show that way. And then after I keep the show playing on repeat as kind of like my comfort show, like when I'm cooking or, you know, cleaning, I'll have it on as just, you know, just, it feels like home. It feels like it's what should be playing in my house. And I was watching it after I had booked Days of Our Lives. And I knew that Joey was on Days, but I never really put two and two together. He has a scene as Dr. Draker Morey where he's in the hospital room and he kisses a woman in a coma or who just got out of a coma. That woman she plays my mother on the show. They had real Days of Our Lives actors. And I'm like doing my thing. I'm like cleaning or whatever. And I look over and I'm like, is that Christian Alfonso? Is Joey Tribbiani kissing my mother? I absolutely freaked out, cried, called my sister, and I'm like, you will never believe what I just realized. Yeah, that show is so close to me for so many reasons, but that was a moment that stuck out for sure, because I look over and Joey's kissing my mother. I'm like, wow, this is as good as life gets, honestly. I'm good from here.
Oh my God. You know, I have to ask you this. You know, you mentioned going to LaGuardia High School. Obviously, you were super talented from a young age, but did you ever imagine yourself in soap operas? Like, did you think you were going to be doing that type of acting?
No, and I don't think that's, you know, I'm limited to that. Like, yes, technically, I am a star on a soap right now, but I'm an actress first and foremost. Like, I started in theater when I was 7, and I carried that out. And then I've, you know, done movies, I've done horror films, I've done, you know, Lifetime films. I did an episode of Modern Family. So I'm like all over the map. I'm an actress first and foremost. I never thought that I would get a soap. I didn't really see that in my future. But, you know, when I booked Days, I was a struggling actress living in LA. I was a waitress. I had $4 in my bank account. And I was offered a 2-year contract to be on a soap. And I was thrilled at the opportunity. Like, it was my first, real big gig, my first leading, like, you know, series, it was epic. And I love every second of it. I've learned so much. But to answer your question, no, I never grew up thinking that I was going to be on a soap. And I don't necessarily categorize myself as a soap actor. I'm just an actor who happened to book a soap and is still on it.
Now, I'm going to use a little baseball parallel here for a second. There's different hitters that will, yeah, you know, they're going to adjust their game based on the type of pitcher. If it's a knuckleballer, you're going to approach that differently than you would someone who's throwing 100 mile an hour fastballs. You're going to approach a left-handed pitcher than different than you're going to approach a right-handed hitter, pitcher. What's like the biggest difference between the audition for a soap opera, for example, and, you know, some of the movies that you auditioned for and then booked, or just like, you know, even the sitcoms? Right.
The audition process, I wouldn't say that there is a big difference, just because I approach acting with my own technical training and like the way, like, acting is one and the same for me, you know, like stay truthful to the script, to the situation, stay truthful to your on-screen partner, you know, like remain grounded and truthful in the situation. So the audition wasn't different. What is drastically different is our filming process and the material we are given. Like, my character so far has been kidnapped 7 times. She's been set on fire by multiple different family members 4 times. She's been exploded in a car. Somehow she survives. Like, the shit that we go through is so far-fetched and so different that the way I play it is the same as I would play any other thing. It's just the lines and the story is drastically different than anything I've ever done. And also, the rate at which we film is psychotically fast. Because we air every day, we have to constantly be in production. So the studio is capable of filming 3 episodes in 1 day. That's crazy. We do like 180 pages a day collectively. I remember the most that I had to film in 1 day personally was 80 pages of dialogue, because I had 3 episodes that day. We don't really have time for rehearsal half the time. And we only have time to do 1 take. So with movies and stuff, you get coverage, you get, you know, 4 to 10 to 15 takes of 1 scene, because, you know, the director and the team is waiting for you to get your best performance. For soaps, it's not necessarily about giving us our best performance. It's about getting it done on time. So they'll give us 1 take, move on. With the episodes, what you see is what you get. We have 1 chance to go up there, perform our stuff, and then you move on to the next scene. So in that way, it's very, very different than anything else in film and TV ever, you know? And because of that, I feel like my skill has grown at an exponential rate only because I thrive under this pressure. And I have no choice but to succeed after the first time. So like, when I step on a movie set again and I see 12 pages on the roster, that's a lot for a movie set. But for me, that's going to be like easy peasy lemon squeezy, because I've been dealing with 80 pages a day for the past 3 years. So it's like, I'm really grateful for this opportunity, because I feel like I've learned things here that I can't learn at a conservatory. I can't learn in acting class, and I can't learn on any other set. Yeah.
Yeah. No, what a way to put it. So if you botch one line, what happens? Do they give you like 1 more chance to get it right, or they just cut the scene?
I mean, it depends on how badly you botch it. There are times where I botch a line and they're like, no, that was fine for us, moving forward. But let's say you completely mess up a line and you cuss, or you go, oops, I'm sorry, let's run that back. They'll be like, okay, and we're taking it from this exact line. Like, it's very quick. You don't get to start the whole scene over. Sometimes you do. But ultimately, you don't really have a choice. Like, actors have been fired from soaps for doing that too often, like messing up the lines too often and slowing down production. Like, they take it very seriously. One of the skills that you need to possess as a soap actor is the ability to memorize your lines quickly, is the ability to perform and show up and do your work and not mess up. And I feel like the stigma that people have about soaps and soap actors is like, oh, they're such bad actors because blah, 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 blah. No, just because you don't relate to the material and you don't find that enjoyable doesn't mean that we're not some of the hardest working actors in the game, if not the most. Like, we work our asses off, for lack of a better word. And I think that people should know, like, and take that into account and take us more seriously. It's like, you try to step on the set where we're filming 80 pages a day, you know, talking about how I've been blown up and somehow brought back to life, and do it seriously. Like, we can't, you know, like, it's a lot of work, and everyone works so hard. So, I think that we deserve a lot more props than, you know, the general public is willing to give us. And that's just because they don't understand the process behind what goes into what we do.
Right. No, hey, listen, I'll give you all the credit in the world, obviously. Like I mentioned, it's always a special occasion when we get to welcome folks in from the soap world. But however, like you said before, you're not just a soap actress, you're an actress in the most pure sense of the term. I was thinking about that. I think, you know, Jen Lilly as well. You know, it's very similar. Yeah. Look at how many different types of roles she can play as well. I think you're always in the ready position based on that. You know, you have to be on your feet. So, like, you know, to use a little baseball term, you're always in the ready position. The ball's always going to be hit to you, and you have to think quickly because you don't have all the time in the world. But I think that, you know, the skills that you exhibit, they show a lot of talent. So you're a very diversified player, so to speak.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Absolutely. And I have to ask you, how was Beyond Salem proposition to you? Was this on the table for a while, or was this kind of a pleasant surprise?
It was a pleasant surprise. So they called me, actually. I got a phone call from one of our executive producers, Albert.
That's my name.
He called me.
That's my full Albert? Name. Yeah. Okay. I don't hear it that often. That's why I got so excited.
Albert. Albert called me on the day of the Emmys, the real ones, the ones where I found out this was beforehand. And he was like, hey, I know you're probably busy, but I have something to talk to you about. We're planning on doing a spinoff with Peacock and NBC. And he gave me a brief little rundown. And he was just like, does that seem like something you're interested in? And I'm like, you know what? That sounds like a lot of fun. Yeah, I would potentially be really interested in that. You know, forward the information along over to the rest of my team, and we'll discuss, you know, what to do with this. And it happened really fast. We filmed the entire series in like a week. And it was put into production about a month and a half after I got the call. So it was quick, and it was a surprise. And I had no idea that it would excel in the way that it did. Like, Sony promoted it, NBC promoted it, Peacock promoted it. It was everywhere. You know, we had a star-studded cast. Lisa Rinna was a part of it. Jack A. Harry, Eileen Davidson. You know, we had some wonderfully, incredibly and talented people join the cast, and it was really refreshing. And we had more time to shoot this. Like, our shooting days were longer, and we had a couple takes occasionally, you know, depending on the scene. But generally, we still filmed fast. We still filmed at the rate a soap films. But it was nice. It was a nice change of pace and a change of storyline. And also, because it was on a streaming service, it was treated as a primetime show, meaning we had more freedom to talk about certain things and that aren't necessarily allowed on daytime television. Like, we are restricted, you know, 4 days of our lives, because the audience is a very specific audience, and it does air at like 12 PM. So it can't be too crazy and raunchy. Whereas on Beyond Salem, I don't know if you know the storyline, but my character found herself in the middle of a sex party. She was accidentally found in the middle of an orgy, and she just walked in on this, and it's like, oh my God. So we had a lot of fun exploring the dramatics of a soap without the soap limitations.
Yeah. I mean, I knew about the guns and the jewel heist and everything just from the trailer, but the sex party, that's news to me. Wow. This is like,
that happens in episode 5. The very last one.
So that trailer isn't just like Hollywood working its magic. It's really that intense.
Yeah, absolutely.
Wow. So maybe you have a so does this qualify you for a primetime Emmy next?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know how streaming services work with Emmys. I guess it does. We would have to see, you know, who's nominated and whatnot. But I assume so. I'm the wrong person to ask. I don't know anything about anything. So
the Academy rules, you don't have them like up on the wall? No.
Right. Like, no, I don't. But, you know, if I do find out anything, I will let you know.
Yeah, well, we'll certainly be rooting for you, obviously.
Yeah, now, thank you.
Of course. Now, are you out in LA these days full time?
I am. Yeah, I actually just got back from New York yesterday for Fashion Week. That was crazy and chaotic. I didn't even feel like I was home because I was working literally 24/7. But yeah, I've been in LA for 5 years now, and I try to make it back home as much as I can. I miss New York more and more every day. I do plan on going back at some point, you know, when my career is a bit more stable and I don't have to be out here. But yeah, I've been enjoying my time out here while I've been living.
What's been the biggest difference, either positive or negative?
So there are two, and one of them is positive and one of them is negative. The positive one is that I'm very much into nature. Like, I love escaping into the forest. I love the beach. You know, Coney Island ain't no walk in the park. Coney Island may as well be a nuclear waste plant. Like, it is disgusting out there. So when I want to go to the beach, I can't. Whereas California, the coast is gorgeous. You know, Malibu is a 40-minute drive away from me. I can go snowboarding and surfing in the same day. There are mountains and a plethora of hikes and so much nature for me to enjoy. And I feel like that really grounds me, and nature is what I need in life. So I'd say California has a one up over New York in that sense. But the negative thing, the biggest difference I've noticed is just society and like the people. And it took me a while to find my tribe out here just because I'm so picky with who I let into my life. And a lot of the people that I was meeting weren't making me feel good. Like, my energy wasn't thriving around them. I feel like everyone in LA that you meet, whether they're born and bred in LA or whether they're transplants, they have some kind of ulterior motive. This is very much the town that is fake. You know, it is the town of plastic surgery, and it is the town of, you know, everyone like being a certain way to your face. It's glorifying your life on social media and not being real. And New York is all about being real. And that's what I'm missing out here, is going out in public and people being real with me. And I miss that. So once I found my tribe, I stuck with them. I'm fortunate and blessed enough to have found an amazing group of people to surround myself with. But ultimately, yeah, I don't really vibe with LA's vibe in general. It's just very surface level to me. And you know, being a New Yorker, we don't chit chat for no reason. When we say something, we say it to say it. So it was hard to adjust, but I've adjusted and I've learned how to maneuver around it where it doesn't compromise my mental health.
Now, if you don't mind my asking, where'd you meet your new tribe? Did you meet them on set? Is there like, have you just become more acclimated with the area so you know where to socialize, I guess? Like, how does that kind of work? Because really, aside from college, I've really only lived in New York. So I'm very curious about this.
Yeah. No, I met a couple of them on set. My closest friend, Lindsay, is actually from New York. So, of course, the two New Yorkers gravitate to each other. And then I just met other people along the way that really, you know, different movie sets in different situations. And it's like you meet some people and you don't really click with them, and that's fine. And they come into your life and you're like, okay, if we ever see each other, we'll be cordial. You know, we know each other, we don't vibe, we don't click. And then some people just stand out and you find yourself feeling really good around them. And especially in LA, those are the people that you need to hold on to. So yeah, just through the years, like, I've been out here for 5 years. I don't have a massive group of friends, you know, and I like to keep it that way. But the ones that I have found, I have no intention of letting go anytime soon. They're all of the people in my life are ride or dies.
I can totally relate to that. I mean, these days, you know, as I just turned 30 not long ago, it's interesting. Your circle does get smaller, but at least in my case, probably because I've only lived in New York, it's pretty much been like the same core since high school. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it has gotten, I guess it's been weeded out a little bit over the years. But yeah, like you said, it's, you know, it's funny. You mentioned your friend Lindsay, her being a New Yorker. You have a lot of the same values and the same mentality and everything. And there's a lot to be said for that, because even with a lot of my buddies who went away to college, yeah, they're still tight with many of their college friends, but there's just something about home, I guess, that's a little bit more comforting, you know, especially when you're far away out in LA, you know?
Yeah. People who are born and bred and cut from the same cloth, like, we get each other in ways that others can't. And we value certain things that others don't necessarily value. So it's, I always find that when I meet a New Yorker in LA, we're both like, hey, I see you, you see me, we see each other, you know, like, we're here for each other. And there's an automatic like bond that just can't be broken. I love it.
Now, I was surprised. You know, you talked about some of the negatives, but I take it you miss L&B pizza as well.
Mm-hmm. I miss all the pizza. Listen, I was back in New York for this week. I had pizza and bagels every day, basically every day. I like to carbo load while I'm at home because I know I can't get it out here.
So my father's family, they're all from Brooklyn. So my spots, you mentioned Coney Island. I take it you know Gargiulio's?
No.
Oh, great Italian place. It's right. It's not far, you know, like I know where it's not Astroland anymore, but then, you know, you got the Cyclone Stadium, it's right down the block from their great Italian place. Michael's a Marine Park, L&B. I don't know if you remember Edelman's Kosher Deli back in the day, but that was there.
I do.
You remember Edelman's?
Yeah.
Oh, the best. Yeah. Oh, you're making me miss Brooklyn. I'm a borough away, but I gotta, now I'm like
where
hungry
are you right now?
So I'm in Midtown Manhattan, at least for now, moving in a couple weeks to a different area, which I'm relieved about because it's changed a lot here since COVID hit, so to speak.
Yeah.
There's like more unrest in Midtown.
I feel like every time I come back home, I have to reacquaint myself with the city. That's also something that bothers me is New York changes so fast. And when you're there for the change, it's less harsh. But then being out here and then coming home and me being like, wait, my favorite spot is closed. Or, oh, they turned that bodega in Harlem into a Whole Foods. You're like, where, what happened? Like, where was I? Why are they doing this to the city? And that really saddens me, is not being there to grow with the city. I have to reacquaint myself every time I go. And it's starting to not feel like home. Like the other day, I used to know the subway map on the back of my hand, right? The other day I got lost in the train. I'm like, whoa, I'm a New Yorker. This is not me. Like, what is happening? I'm sorry. I'm on the queue right now. I thought, like, what? How did I get on the queue? You know, it's crazy. But then again, there's also the silver lining to that, where it's like, when you're in New York for too long, the magic kind of goes away. Like I would reflect back onto when I would walk through the streets and it would be just another day. Now I'm walking by the streets and I'm like, oh, it smells like garbage and sewer. I love it. I'm like, do you smell that in the air? It's, you know, urine. Like it smells amazing. And that magic that like Kevin McAllister felt when he went to the city in Home Alone 2.
The best
that's
one.
How I feel. Absolutely. Hands down. But that's how I feel every time I'm in New York now. I get to re-experience the magic of it. And I get to feel the butterflies in my stomach when I'm there, which is something that you lose when you live there for too long, you know? So I get to re-experience the magic. But then again, I miss a lot of what's going on in the city. So, you know, there are ups and downs to everything. There's the yin and the yang.
Yeah.
But I try to just look at the positive if I can. But yeah, I do miss home. I want to go back so bad. Ultimately, I would love to be bi-coastal and like have a place out here, have a place out there, and just travel back and forth for, you know, whenever I feel like it.
Why don't you do some Broadway that way, or at least do like a little bit of a residency in a Broadway show? That way you can, you know, spend an extended period of time here in New York and then,
there's,
you know, go
lot
back
of politics.
To
politics. Yeah.
Go on. Wait, let's talk politics.
Not politics.
I know, I'm kidding.
Like in the industry, just like certain things. For what I'm trying to accomplish right now, it just makes fiscal sense for me to stay out here. LA is where a lot of the movies and TV shows cast, and they oftentimes need an LA based person. So for the sake of my career, I do have to stay here. But the second I think that it's all right for me to go to New York and it wouldn't compromise my career standpoint, best believe I'm hopping on that JetBlue plane. First class, I don't care. I'm celebrating. Bring on the bubbly. Excuse me, Ms. Stewardess, bring on some Moe, please. Moe? How do you even pronounce that?
So now you know the sponsors of Beyond Salem are obviously JetBlue and Moe.
No, but can they sponsor me in my life? JetBlue, if you're listening.
Friend ambassador. All right. Oh my God, that's too good. Now, mom and dad are still in Brooklyn, right?
My mom bought a house in Staten Island because she was sick of living in an apartment. She wanted a home. Okay. So now she has a house out there. And yeah, my dad is still in Brooklyn.
Now, did you, when you were growing up, were they big into the arts? Is that kind of how you caught the bug?
No, they weren't actually. I found the passion by myself when I was seven. I was always a very creative kid. I would express myself artistically in a plethora of ways. I remember I took a roll of aluminum foil once and I created a fashion line. I created clothing and I performed a little runway show for my family, dressed from head to toe in aluminum foil tiaras and crowns and you know, earrings and all that. I even made myself aluminum foil shoes. Like, I was always a little weird and I would always find a way to express myself in an unconventional way. And then I remember watching a play when I was seven and seeing something about seeing it happen live in front of me, like, completely blew me away. And I knew that I wanted to be a part of it. You know, when you watch film and TV, especially as a kid, you don't really understand that those are real people and that's something you can do. You know, it seems very unattainable. And it's like, oh, the only way you can get on TV is if someone discovers you at a supermarket or something like that. Like, it didn't really occur to me that I could go out there, work my ass off and actually make it. So I just wanted to be in plays and do it for my own personal enjoyment. And you know, like I did have a backup plan. I did go to college for psychology and criminal law. Like I was supposed to be something else, but I can't see myself working any other job other than this. Like I can't. I'm going to be an actress for the rest of my life and I'm not going to take no for an answer, no matter how long it takes, no matter what happens. I'm going to get to where I know I'm destined to be, you know?
Yeah, you have to have that mentality because it's the survival of the fittest, and especially mentally more than anything.
Yeah, if you don't have faith in yourself, you're setting yourself up for failure. If you don't believe in yourself, who's going to believe in you? Like, that's who's going to, you know?
Yeah. Hell yeah. I you don't have to convince me. I'm very much of that belief myself. And, you know,
praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
I mentioned before, you know, you've accomplished so much in a short period of time, but I want to preface you for a moment. It might get tough here on Break a Bat with this little segment that we do called Fastball Derby. Victoria, are you familiar?
Okay. I'm not.
All right. So I want you to picture your... Yeah, so Fastball Derby. So now I take it during your first Yankee game, Mariano Rivera was probably still pitching for the team. He was probably the closer for the Yankees.
No, probably. I can't remember. I was very young.
So if it was before 2014, then Mariano was still on the team. Yes. He had a nasty... Okay. Yeah, so it was before then. He had a nasty pitch called a cutter. And basically, his main successor has been someone who's the complete opposite. His name is Aroldis Chapman. And Aroldis Chapman is a closer who throws just pure heat. He's the fastest throwing man of all time. He throws 105 miles an hour at times, which is a major league record. So when you're in the batter's box against him, you got to think quick. So in this circumstance, less any neck tattoos, I want you to visualize me as Aroldis Chapman, as you know, the pitcher on the mound, throwing really fast. Mm-hmm. And you have to swing as quick as you can. I'll ask you a question and you tell me the first thing that comes to your mind. How does that sound?
That sounds great. That sounds like it happened on an episode of Friends too. Phoebe and Joey played the game where it's like, okay, north route or south route, where he was trying to figure out how to get to Vegas.
Oh my God. Wait a second. Was that when they drove her grandmother's taxi there? Oh my God. Yep. He kept falling asleep. Yeah.
Right. And they're like, who do you want to sleep with? Monica or Rachel? And Ross is like, dude, that's my sister. Like, why are you... Yep, I know every episode of Friends.
Oh my God! Well, I might just add a fun question to Fastball Derby in that case, but I'll keep that in my back pocket. Let's start you off easy. All
right. Okay, great.
Batter up. Favorite New York City meal?
Pizza.
Do you have a favorite pizzeria?
Corner Pizza. It's a couple blocks away from my hometown where I grew up in Kensington. It's my childhood, so it's going to be my favorite just because it was my go-to, and it's what home tastes like to me.
Favorite holiday tradition?
Christmas dinner. Polish people have this thing where we have Vigilia on Christmas Eve, and we have a very specific meal set up for us, and it's very traditional and cultural, but we make like warm fruit stew to drink. It's really weird and unconventional, but yeah, probably Christmas dinner.
Favorite Friends episode?
The one where Joey gets a turkey caught on his head.
Oh, that's like, I think it's called like the one with all the Thanksgivings where they also flash back when Monica dropped the knife on Chandler's foot.
When he came to visit. Yeah, that episode is hilarious to me.
That's a good one. Okay, you could be the lead in one Broadway musical. What would it be?
Oh, my God. Grease. I would want to be Sandy.
Yeah.
No, I'm not blonde. I could wear a wig.
They've had, you know, when they did the revival in 07, they had Laura Osnes play Sandy Sione. It's not a, like a hair, I was going to say, it, like they're not stereotyping by your hair color anymore for that role. So that's a good thing. all right. How about this? Greatest baseball game or sporting event you've ever been to?
Oh God. Oh God. You're going to hate me. Oh God. Okay. So we know I'm a Yankees fan. What you did not know about me is that I'm a Pats fan.
How does that happen?
I don't know. You can't ask me. There's no rhyme and reason. But I went to a Pats game. It was Pats versus the Jets. Oh my God.
I'm not a Jets fan, so you're not offending me. I tell people the Titans because I love the Grand Ole Opry and Nashville in general. So you're not offending me. Go ahead.
I don't know how I'm a fan of a Boston team. Ugh, it's a shame, and I'm very ashamed of it. Trust. I do feel like I'm betraying New York. Trust. It's disgusting. However, I am a Pats fan. I went to a Pats Jets game in Gillette Stadium, and the Pats won. It was a New Year's Eve game. It was the coldest game of the season of in history, I think. The wind chill was like negative 75. We were on the news. The news anchors were like, these people are psychotic. I got a beer and the beer froze over at the top within 15 minutes. It was an interesting time, but I loved being there because it was my first football game. And it was just really nice to feel the energy.
Wow. I never would have pegged you as a girl at an NFL stadium on New Year's Eve. Okay. That's kind of awesome.
Yeah. Surprises everywhere.
Oh, here's a kind of fun one. Let's turn back the clock for a moment. You have to binge watch one of these 80s sitcoms. Growing Pains or The Wonder Years? Which are you binging?
Growing Pains.
Great answer. It's a win-win either one, and they're both very bingeable, but I was just curious. Yeah. most embarrassing on-set moment.
Oh God. I don't know. I don't really embarrass easy. I think that like I'm just goofy and people expect goofy out of me. So I don't really have an embarrassing. I mean, there's this one mishap that happened where I was eating a blue lollipop right before I was supposed to film, and my entire mouth was bright blue, like an Oompa Loompa. Like I was an Oompa Loompa from the inside out. And they were like, V, what is wrong with your mouth? They're like, open. And I'm like, don't tell me to open. Like, what's happening? Like, what do you mean? There's something wrong with my mouth. There's something wrong with your mouth. Like, what do you mean? My entire mouth was bright blue. And so they had to cut for lunch so that I had time to de-blue my mouth. So that's something that happened. That's like unconventional and weird.
Wait, was this on the dual set?
Yeah.
Oh my God. So this is a little Friends abbreviation there, but I mean, you talk about, you know, being on a tight schedule. It's interesting that they're able to accommodate time for you to get your mouth.
Because we just so happen to be approaching our lunch break. You know, we do have to follow like SAG-AFTRA rules and stuff. So after a certain amount of filming time, we have to be given a break. And so it was right around the lunch break. And so they were just like, let's just break early. Let Victoria have time because we cannot. They tried to film with my blue mouth, but they couldn't make it work because I opened my mouth too much. I don't know. you know, we have big mouths. So apparently I was too loud. And they needed time for me to brush and whatnot. So was an interesting little moment.
Okay. Your time at Gillette Stadium on New Year's Eve, what's the fact about you that would surprise people the most?
I once watched an hour long documentary about seashells and how they were made. I'm like a random nerd and I know so many random facts about different things. Like I don't know a lot of like American history and whatnot. I don't know what most people would know, but I know random things like 98% of koalas are lesbians. I know that. Like I just know mad random facts. That's something that I have a lot of interesting knowledge in my repertoire.
That's interesting. First of all, I would never peg you as the type to sit down for an hour and watch a documentary about seashells and those, you know, those seashells
are so cool. Seashells are basically the fingernails of the ocean. Like they're so cool. Yeah. I find ordinarily mundane things interesting. Like I'm such a nerd at heart. I'm such a little nerd. I love it.
You mentioned going to Malibu before. I mean, there's probably nothing more beautiful than that. I haven't been there in about 10 years, to tell you the truth. Last time I was out in Cali in general, I was 21, but just that shoreline. Do you actually like go out and collect seashells now in Malibu?
So the seashells in California are particularly boring because of the algae and the biosphere that the seashells live in. So this is where my knowledge comes in handy. The most interesting looking seashells are those in the southern areas of the world because the climate and the way marine life is set up down there basically allows for seashells to be more beautiful in color and different shapes and whatnot. The seashells in Northern America are typically like the white, you know, Sally seashells by the seashore kind of things. So yeah, I don't really collect them out here, but every time I go abroad, I collect my seashells.
That is very cool. Now these are like our standard two closers. I have a feeling I know what you might say, but you're just full of surprises tonight for this next question. I'm really curious to hear where you take it. Favorite moment in your career so far?
Favorite moment in my career so far? Tempted to say the Emmy. But honestly, there was this one time that I auditioned for Batwoman, the new CW show, when they fired Ruby Rose, or she left. I don't know what happened with that, but Ruby Rose had to be replaced. And I went all the way. I was runner up. It was between me and Javicia, the girl who actually booked it. But I was so close. I could taste it, close to being Batwoman. And that, although I didn't get it, that moment to me was like, but you can, like, you're capable. It was kind of like a pat on the back and a little, you know, sign from the universe being like, keep going. You're almost there, you know? So that, you know, that tied with my Emmy are two of my favorite moments in my career.
Wow. See, I figured that you'd end up saying the Emmy, but little stories like that, I just love when we get to kind of uncover those deep dives here on.
Yeah,
that's so cool to hear. Well, this is the last one that we use to wrap every show. And you got to think about this one, because it seems like you're very smart and you have a really good head on your shoulders. And I'm sure it's rooted in a great upbringing, the people you surround yourself with. But what is the best piece of advice anyone's ever given you?
It's not that serious regarding everything. It's not as serious as you make it out to be. It's not that hard. Life is not that we complicate everything for ourselves so much. And you know, we take everything personally and very seriously. And it's like, it's not that deep. It's not that serious. Take most things with a grain of salt and move on. You know, don't try to overthink anything. And this applies to personal relationships, professional relationships, how you feel about yourself, how you feel about others, how you feel about social media. Like, don't take everything too seriously.
I needed
to live life for yourself.
Yeah. You know what? I needed to hear that today myself, you know, just because it's been a crazy week and was feeling overwhelmed in some ways. And honestly, it's not that deep. Yeah. You just in general brought
it's not that serious.
You're right. It's not. It really isn't. I think we all needed to hear that.
Saying I cut you off.
No, I was just saying it's like it's refreshing to, because you know, we're recording this at about, you know, around 6 o'clock on the East Coast time here. So I had like a pretty long work day and it was just nuts. Mm-hmm. And this was like I feel a lot better going into dinner tonight after, you know, your little bit of wisdom. So I don't have to like lose sleep over the chaos that ensued on my Wednesday here in New York. So thank you for that.
Yeah. Oh, you're welcome. Yeah. Chaos is only as important as we allow it to be. Like, we can allow it to affect us, or we can acknowledge it and move on and like, just, you know, decide to be happy. And I know it's easier said than done. It's hard to step back and just live a fruitful, happy, stress-free life. You know, I'd be lying if I said I didn't feel stressed. This past week going into Fashion Week was one of the most stressful weeks of my life. Everything flipped upside down for me. I had a whole like mishap with technology and everything, but it's just like, the only way to get through it is to remind yourself that like, you don't have to take it so seriously. Life is so short and so fun if you let it. So yeah.
Wow. By the way, it looks like you were having all things considered, you know, we shouldn't take social media too seriously, but it looks like you were having a nice time during Fashion Week. So hopefully you could come next time you come back to New York and everything, be sure to stop by Broadway, because we'd certainly love to, you know, meet you one day. Cause, this was awesome.
Oh,
you were such a light in the batter's box, Victoria.
Oh my God. Thank you so much. Oh my God.
Such a great time tonight. And for the folks at home who may want to connect with you on social media and see what you're up to and everything, where's the best place for them to find you?
I am the most active on Instagram. I do have a Twitter, but I don't go on it because I can only handle so much social media at one time. So I've chosen Instagram as my designated platform, and that is at Victoria Conifol. It's just my first and last name.
Awesome. And listen, thank you so much again for coming on the show tonight. This is an absolute blast.
Yeah, thank you for having me. It was so much fun.
Oh, my pleasure. And be sure to catch Victoria on Peacock. You can view Beyond Salem in its entirety right now. And we were just so happy that we were able to put this one together. And I hope everyone in our audience certainly enjoyed it as much as I did. So with that being said, this is Al Malafronte signing off for Break a Bat in the Broadway Podcast Network. We'll see you next time. Thanks for listening to Break a Bat. This is produced by the fine folks at the Broadway Podcast Network. Visit and subscribe at bpn.fm/breakabat. You can find me online at break_a_bat_podcast. And you can also find the Broadway Podcast Network on Instagram at Broadway Podcast Network. It's been so great having you here with us today, and we'll see you next time.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.